You are listening to BensTorah.com.
Some of the deeper aspects of what Hanukkah contains, what Hanukkah represents, and hopefully we could gain from Hanukkah and see what's unique about Hanukkah, different than perhaps all the other Yom Tovim that we encounter all year long. I don't want to really spend the shiur with sources, but I want to at least open up the sources just for the very beginning of the shiur. The topic of the shiur tonight is the secret love of Hanukkah. You'll see why it's called that a little bit later, and why Hanukkah is not in Tanakh. So the Gemara in Yoma points this out. The Gemara in Yoma, Daf Chav Tes Amud Aleph, says, Amar Avasi, why is Esther compared to the dawn? To tell you, says the Gemara, Mashachar Sof Kalai, just as the dawn is after an entire night, a dark night, so too Esther is at the end of all the Nisim. Dawn comes after night, so too Esther comes at the end of the Nisim. Asks the Gemara, that's not true. There's a later, historically later, Nes, and that's Vayikra Chanukah. Says the Gemara, no. We're only speaking about Nisim that are able to be written. Nitzna likasev kamrinan. However, Chanukah cannot be written. That's what the Gemara says. The question is, what in the world does it mean that Chanukah is a yontif that can't be written? What is it about Chanukah that is not appropriate to have as part of Tanakh? All the other Nisim are part of Tanakh. It's not just that chronologically Chanukah occurred 150 years after Tanakh was finished, because, hey, Tanakh could have been concluded and canonized 150 years later. There seems to be something fundamental that Gemara is telling us about the nature of Chanukah, the nature of the Nes of Chanukah, that it's not nitan lichtov, the Gemara says. It's not given to be written or included in Tanakh. It's not just that it happens not to be in Tanakh, it's that it can't be in Tanakh. What I'd like to understand tonight is, what is it about Chanukah that cannot be contained in Tanakh? That's the goal of this evening's shiur. I'd like to share with you two or three short ideas, and then we'll develop a longer idea after the first few minutes that will hopefully give us a beautiful insight of what's unique about Chanukah, what makes Chanukah different from certainly Purim and all the other Yom Tovim, and that will explain to us why Chanukah cannot be included in Tanakh. So first I want to share with you a beautiful pshat of the Kedushas Levi. The Kedushas Levi says something incredible. He says that the natural world is mishubad to Torah. That means that the natural world could only operate based on Torah law. So says the Kedushas Levi the following. In the time of Mordechai and Esther, we had the Nes of, you know, the Nes of Purim, and that Nes, was that a Nes al pi derech hateva or not derech hateva? There was nothing supernatural about the Nes of Mordechai and Esther. There's nothing supernatural about, you know, the fact that this coincidence happened. Of course there was hashgacha. Of course HaKadosh Baruch was running the show. He was pulling all the puppet pieces in every aspect of the Nes of Purim. But there was nothing me'al derech hateva. It was all within the realm of nature, just Hashem running nature. But Chanukah was a little bit different. Chanukah was a milchama. The milchama was me'al derech hateva. All the idea of ma'atim v'yad giborim, mechalashim v'yad. The very fact that we had to fight and go out me'al derech hateva, and the fact that the nes happened me'al derech hateva. So listen carefully with this difference to what the Kedushas Levi explains as being a significant difference, why Purim could therefore, yes, be included in Tanakh, while Chanukah cannot be included in Tanakh. Listen carefully. Since Teva is controlled by the Torah, so Purim, which happened and occurred b'derech HaTeva, has to be contained in the Torah so that the Torah, so that the scriptures, that Tanakh, could provide the path for the Nes that's within Teva of Purim to occur. Masha'en Kain, says the Kedushas Levi, Chanukah, which is me'al derech HaTeva, it doesn't need the guidance of the Torah to give it a position, to give it a direction, so that it could happen. Because once it's me'al derech HaTeva, it's in Hashem's hands, anything can happen, Hashem could do whatever He wants, it doesn't have to be bound by the Torah. And therefore, Chanukah need not be in the Torah at all, because Chanukah is me'al derech HaTeva. Masha'en Kain Purim, which is b'derech HaTeva, and the Torah has to follow the direction of the Torah, therefore the Torah has to write down the Nes of Purim to give a direction, to give a parameters, and to give, to guide and to steer the Nisim of Purim to occur, and that they'll be guided by the Torah. That's because Purim is B'derech HaTeva. That's one thought that I wanted to share with you. I want to share with you another idea as to why the Chanukah, the Yantar of Chanukah, is not for Tanakh, because the Satmar Rebbe says the following. The Satmar Rebbe in Sefer Divrei Yoel, he says, what was the goal of the Yevanim? What are the Yevanim trying to do? Well, in a certain sense, the Yevanim were trying to be oker, more than anything else, Torah Sheba'al Peh. And I'll explain to you what I mean by that. We say in Maoz Tzur, Partzu Chomos Migdalai V'Timu Kol Hashmanim. Part of what they did were they were Metame Kol Hashmanim. Does anyone know how or why or in what way the Yevanim were Metame Kol Hashmanim? I'll tell you why. Because it's the Issur D'Rabbanan, there's a Tumah D'Rabbanan that a Nachri is Tame and makes things Tame on the status of a Zav. Just like a Zav is Tame, Midaraisa, so too the Chachamim gave every Gentile the status of a Tumas Zav. That's a Gzeres D'Rabbanan. And therefore they use that Koach HaTumah, that Koach HaTumah that's only Koach Tumah D'Rabbanan, to be Metame Kol Hashmanim. And therefore, once we defeated our enemies, once we defeated the Yevanim, the Chashmonaim wanted to demonstrate what was the battle. The battle was that the Yevanim were out to use that koach of Chachamim, that koach of Tumah D'Rabbanan, to be metamei kol hashmanim, to wreak havoc on our lives, to wreak havoc on the Beis HaMikdash by coming in with that Tumah D'Rabbanan. So therefore, we commemorate it by celebrating Torah Sheba'al Peh. Torah Sheba'al Peh, which is the Koach of the Rabbanan, not as opposed to the Koach of Tanakh, as opposed to the Koach of Tanakh, which is, the Koach directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the divine revelation from directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what Tanakh is. Here we have the whole Nes of Chanukah and the whole battle of Chanukah, the Nes of Chanukah was because of the Drabanans, because of the Koach of Torah Sheba'al Peh, and therefore Chachamim saw appropriate not to commemorate it by putting it in Torah Shebichsav, but to the contrary, leaving it in Torah Sheba'al Peh, which is what the Nes, what the battle was about, and what the victory was about. It was all in the realm of Torah Sheba'al Peh. One last idea that I'd like to share about why Chanukah makes it, why Purim makes it into Torah Sheba'al Peh, Torah Shebichsav, but not Chanukah. And that's a thought from the Yaros Dvash. The Yaros Dvash, Chelek Aleph to Rosh Ches, says that there's something very unique about the story of Chanukah that we don't find in other stories throughout Jewish history. Basically, the theme of Tanakh, the theme of all the Nevi'im, the theme of certainly Sefer Shoftim, you see it like every other line, but the theme of all of Tanakh is we're good people, and then we start doing Averis. Little by little, we do more and more Averis. We get into trouble. We have tsaris. We have attackers. We have oppressors. We cry out to Hashem. We start doing tshuva. Hashem saves us. And the cycle begins again. We're good for a little while until we start doing bad. And then we get in trouble. And then we have oppression. And then we have enemies. And then we dive into Hashem and we do tshuva. And we're saved again. And that cycle has repeated itself dozens and hundreds of times throughout all of Jewish history. There's one very remarkable exception. If you look through the story of the Chashmonaim, if you look at the Sfarim that describe what the Jewish people were like during that generation, there's an interesting observation that the Aros Tvash notes. He says he looked through the stories in Yosef and Gurion, one of the contemporary the apocryphal books that describe the events of the Nes of Chanukah, and you see that there was a large chunk of Jews were not really good, and that's what really generated the cause of the Yevanim to come attack us, and they became part of the Yevanim, and there was a certain amount of Hellenization. But what was the victory? The victory was not that Klal Yisrael did tshuva. The victory was not that Klal Yisrael realized their mistakes. The victory was that there was a small pocket, a very small, lively, but very small group of Hashmonaim, led by five people, that said Milash Chemilai, and they weren't even the Balei Aveira. They were the people who had brought all the tsaris upon Klal Yisrael. And they did incredible Mesiris Nefesh, which we'll talk about more at length in a few minutes, and through their Mesiris Nefesh, they were zochah to bring the Geula for all of Klal Yisrael. Wait a second. That doesn't fit the pattern. The pattern that we were supposed to have in all of Jewish history and all of Tanakh represents this pattern is that we're in trouble and we do tshuva, we call out Hashem. That didn't happen. There were 80%, there were a whole bunch, a gigantic percent of people who weren't good, who were Hellenized, and then you had a small pocket of Hashmonaim, you know, dedicate themselves to Hashem, and Hashem helped that small pocket of Hashmonaim and saved the Jewish people in its entirety. So this story, the story of Hanukkah, does not fit the pattern of what Tanakh is trying to express to us, that when you're in trouble, Klal Yisrael, this is the lesson of Tanakh in 100 different ways, in 100 different forms, in 100 different storylines, but it's all one storyline. You're in trouble, do tshuva, call out to Hashem, and I'll save you. That's not what happened on Hanukkah. And therefore, it doesn't fit in the storyline, it doesn't fit in the pattern and the theme and the genre of Tanakh. Because it's not the same nace that we've had throughout all of Tanakh, where we were in trouble, we did tshuva. And that's why, says the Yoresh Dvash, it shouldn't be in Tanakh. Now it should not be in Tanakh, but there's a pasuk that says in Mishlei, Kvod Elokim Hastir Davar. Sometimes it's a greater kavod to Hashem to have things hidden. You know, when Hashem does this kind of nace, where he saves us, not because we did tshuva, not because we all turned to him and pleaded with Hashem, but rather just for whatever reason that he had. He wanted to focus on the goodness of the Hashmonaim, that small minority of the Hashmonaim. He chose to save us nonetheless. That's sometimes a thing that shouldn't be written down. That's not supposed to be written down, because we didn't do tshuva to earn it. And that's why Hanukkah is not nitan likasev. The nes of Hanukkah and the victory of Hanukkah is not given over to be written down. Those are a few, two or three ideas of what's unique about Hanukkah, why it's not fitting to be in Tanakh. But I'd like to now share with you something a little bit more elaborate, something that will build up a little bit and will develop the concept of what was Hanukkah, what was the nes of with the Hashmonaim, what was the nes of the victory of the war. And hopefully this idea will help us understand why fundamentally Hanukkah can't be in Tanakh. This is a beautiful shtickel Torah I'd like to share with you from none other than Rabbi Sachar Shlomo Tachtal, is better known for his sefer Eim HaBanim Smecha, and he wrote a Shailos Tshuva sefer called Mishneh Sachir, and he has a section in that Mishneh Sachir where he also talks about some of the Moedim. And this is the shtickel Torah that I'm going to share with you, is from his discussion about Hanukkah. Now, he was a Talmud of the Munkacher Rebbe, and he shared all the views of the Munkacher Rebbe. And of course, it's well known that he ran away. He was Rosh Yeshiva in Slovakia, and then he ran away to Hungary in the middle of the war. And in the middle of the war, he changed many of his views about Zionism, and he retracted a lot of his other opinions. And all of a sudden, he realized how important it is. In the middle of the war, he came to realize the chashivas of living in Eretz Yisrael. Ultimately, in 1945, on his way to Auschwitz, he was killed. But his sefer, Eim HaBanim Smecha, survived him. And two Svarim of Shaya Tshuvas, called Mishneh Sachir, survived the war. And this shtickel Torah is from his sefer Mishneh Sachir. So Tachtal opens up with a question. First, the question that we're asking, what's unique about Hanukkah that makes it not worthy and not deserving and not appropriate to be the story that is recorded in Tanakh? Why is it different than the Nes of Purim? And to unravel that, he also asks another question that we will answer, and that is, what's fundamentally the difference between Purim and Hanukkah in a different aspect? How come Purim, we know that there's a famous Bach about this, but why is it that Purim we celebrate with Mishteh, with Simcha, with eating, with partying? And Hanukkah we celebrate in a very spiritual way. We celebrate Hanukkah in a way of Hallel, of Hoda'ah. even lighting the candles is a very ethereal, very, very spiritual type of expression of our celebration, as opposed to Purim, which is such a physical way of demonstrating. You know the other answer, the famous answer, that on Purim we were tried to, our enemies wanted to kill our bodies. On Hanukkah they wanted to destroy our souls, and therefore we celebrate in different ways. Okay, that's a great answer, but we're going to have something a little bit more developed than that. Furthermore,
you are listening to BensTorah.com. Okay.
Let me share with you what Rav Teitel sets down as the fundamental difference between Purim on one hand and Chanukah on the other hand. They were absolutely fundamentally different as to how the Nes happened and why the Nes happened. There's a well-known Gemara that describes the miracle of Purim. Gemara Megillah Daf Yudalad says, Gedola hasaras hatabas, greater in terms of pushing Klai Yisrael to do tshuva, was the handing over of the king's ring from Ahasuerus to Haman. That was more powerful and more of a motivation to Klai Yisrael to do tshuva out of absolute terror that they're going to be destroyed, greater than all the 48 Nevi'im and the 7 Nevi'os who are in Risnabe for Klal Yisrael, because all of them weren't successfully able to push Klal Yisrael to do tshuva, but the Hasaras HaTabas, the handing over the signet ring from the king to Haman to do the Jews as you want, as you choose, as you please, that pushed us over the edge, and we were incredible, we reached an incredible level of tshuva that brought about the precipitated the Nes of Purim, and the turnaround of events in the story of Purim. If we stop right here, you see that the Purim Nes is precipitated by a midah of Yira. Yira is what caused Purim to happen. We were terrified. We were scared out of our wits, literally and figuratively, that pushed us to come to do tshuva and to ultimately change Hashem's perspective of us, because we changed our attitude towards Hashem. Furthermore, if you look carefully at what else happened, with the other thing that happened at the time of Purim, because of the nace of Purim, right, we saw the love that HaKadosh Baruch Hu showered on us at the time of Purim. We saw Hashem was behind the scenes and everything that I did. What did Klal Yisrael do? Klal Yisrael rededicated ourselves. Kimu Masha Kiblu Kvar. Kimu V'Kiblu HaYadhu Demen Chazal explained that means that Klal Yisrael renewed their commitments, renewed their vows, as if it were, to be mekabel the Torah. And this really did, they were mekabel Torah me'ava, as opposed to under the pressure at HaSinai, where it was, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu held HaSinai, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and they were forced to accept the Torah. Here on Purim, they accept the Torah out of love. But, what kind of love? What kind of love caused Klal Yisrael to accept the Torah anew at Purim time? If you look at Rashi, that Gemara, when it says that the Jewish people re-accepted upon themselves Torah in the time of Purim, Rashi says, "May ahavas hanes shana aselahem." Out of the love for the miracle that Hashem did for us, we recommitted ourselves to Hashem and reconnected and re-accepted upon ourselves the Torah. Wait a second. I know there are different kinds of love. There's a love that's ahava tluya bedavar, and there's an ahava sheina tluya bedavar. What kind of love is this? Rashi is very clear. The reason why we accepted the Torah anew and with love was because we saw that Hashem saved us. That's an ahava hatluya b'davar. That's not just a love in a vacuum. That we saw Hashem treat us with love, we recompensed HaKadosh Baruch as if it were. We reflected HaKadosh Baruch Hu's love, and we loved Him back, and we're willing to accept the Torah. So in other words, even the love and acceptance of the Torah that was generated by Purim was only because Hashem did something to us. You did to me, I do back to you. So we have the whole nesa of Purim was only because of our fear that prompted us to do tshuva. That's what prompted us to do tshuva. It was the fear that we were going to be destroyed by Haman. That pushed us to do tshuva. And even that which we accepted the Torah after the nesa of Purim was only as a payback, as if it were a tit for tat, a quid pro quo for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who did a nes for us, and He showered us with love, so we, in return, did the same to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we re-accepted the Torah. That, says Rav Teitel, is what Purim is all about. But Hanukkah cannot be farther from the absolute, could not be farther away. Hanukkah is absolutely the opposite. And let's see, understand how Hanukkah is not about Yira, it's not about quid pro quo, it's not about tit for tat, it's not about us, you know, reconnecting to Hashem because of what He did for us. Hanukkah is purely Ahava. And let me explain how Hanukkah is purely Ahava, nothing but Ahava. You see, what was the goal of the Yevanim? They didn't want to kill us. They didn't want to hurt us. They didn't want to take away our businesses. They just wanted us to give up Torah and mitzvahs. If you would have signed on the dotted line and say, I'll become a Greek, I'll give up on Torah and mitzvahs, you would have been rewarded. You would have been invited into the Greek pantheons and the Greek theaters and the Greek coliseums. You would have been put on stage. You'd have been given great gifts. That's what it says, actually, in Sefer Yosifon. If you would have done that, it says in Sefer Yosifon that those who were willing to convert, as if it were, to renounce their Judaism and to join the Greek and Hellenistic culture, were rewarded richly. So, what was the oppression? Well, the oppression was that we couldn't do our mitzvahs. That means that we were willing to sacrifice all the dangers and the tortures that the Yevanim were willing to subject us to because we didn't want to give up our Torah and mitzvahs. There are stories of that generation, the story of Chana v'Shiva Baneha, her seven children who were killed because they didn't bow down to some pagan something or other. They gave up their lives because they didn't want to deny their belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The same generation that, like the Medrash tells us, that the Yevanim told us, Kisu lachem al keren hasher en lehenu chelek be'elokei Yisrael, that we refused to say, no, that we didn't want to disconnect ourselves from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So what was it that prompted us? It wasn't the pressure that prompted us, because to the opposite, the pressure was what should have made us fall. The pressure was to make us, yes, do the avodas, convert to Yevanis, to Hellenization. What was it that made us not give ourselves in and turn ourselves over to those Hellenistic influences? And there's only one reason. It's the incredible Ahava that we had to Torah, the Ahava that we had to mitzvos, the Ahava that we had to Hashem. And that's the only thing that it could have been. And I'll prove it to you. I'll prove it to you. Because when you go to battle, you measure your risks before you go to battle. If you're smart. If you're stupid, then you pick on people who are bigger than you. But anyone smart doesn't pick on a bully if the bully is 325 pounds and 6'6". You pick on a kid who's smaller than you. So what did Bnei Yisrael do in the time of the Yevanim? There's this gigantic Greek army under Alexander the Great who's conquered the world. That's why he's called Alexander the Great, by the way. And this powerful Greek empire, the most powerful empire in the world, we, little twerps, Klal Yisrael, we get up, we close our gemaras, and then we go out to battle them. How could that be? How could we do such a thing? You see, we're described in Al-Hanisim as Ma'atim Biad, Rabim Biad Ma'atim, Torim Biad Sadir, Rishon Biad Sadikim, Torim Biad Keser. So let's look at a few of those that we see in Al-Hanisim. We'll see how each one of these demonstrate that we should never have gone into battle at all. We should never even try to put ourselves to fight against such a formidable foe. First of all, they were many more than we. Rabim Biad Ma'atim, we were very few in number. Number two, we were Tahorim Biad, Tmeim Biad Tahorim. What kind of person do you need to be if you want to be a good warrior? Somebody who likes blood, somebody who has no heart, somebody who's hardened and callous, somebody who has that mid of tuma. We were just the opposite. We were tahorim. Giborim biad chalashim, we were weaklings, and they were tough. They were strong. They were strong soldiers. Risham biad tzadikim. How did Risham spend their day? Risham spend their day, I don't mean to accuse anybody of anything bad, but Risham are the type who, if you want to find the Risham, where are you going to go? Not to the base measure. You're going to go to the gym. In the gym, you find the Rishon. I don't really mean that literally. But if you go to the gym, that's where you're going to find the people who spend their day boxing and lifting weights. You go to the Beis Medrash, you're going to find the Tzaddikim. So in other words, the fact that we were tzaddikim is a reason to assume that we weren't focused on building our bodies and practicing our shot, not our baseball shot, but our slingshot and our catapult shot and our arrow shot. Oske Torah, where are our minds? Are our minds in figuring out the latest military strategies? Are our minds figuring out the ways that we could attack and ambush? Our minds are wrapped around the Gemara Kedushin, the Gemara Yevamis, the Ketzoros, and the Sivas. So every one of these aspects that we speak about in Al HaNisim talk about the fact that we were the underdog of the underdog of the underdog of the underdog five times over in five different ways. So why in the world would such people go on a kamikaze mission to kill themselves to try to battle somebody who's so much stronger than them? It doesn't make sense. For Klai Yisrael to try to battle this formidable foe of the Ivani nation, the Ivani army, it's nothing more than kamikaze, suicidal. So why did they do it? The answer is one. There's one answer. The answer is that they felt so strong in their hearts that they were dead anyway. If you don't let me do mitzvos, I might as well be dead. And if I'm going to be dead because I'm not doing mitzvos, then I might as well fight against you and die that way with the 0.1% chance that maybe I will defeat you and yes, be able to become mitzvos. In other words, the unique melchama of Hanukkah, the unique Mesius Nefesh of Hanukkah, was that they were driven so much through their love for Torah and mitzvahs that they felt that without Torah and mitzvahs, they were just as good as dead. And that's why there's no reason not to go for a kamikaze mission. When will somebody go on a suicide? Do you know the story in the Warsaw Ghetto? It's a terrible story. My own family had this experience when my father-in-law is a Kohen, and my brother-in-law is a Kohen. And we went to Poland together as a family so that they could visit the cities that my father-in-law is from, my mother-in-law is from. And the last day that we were there, we were in Warsaw. We had a tour guide, a Jewish tour guide, a non-religious Jewish tour guide, Polish Jew, non-religious Polish Jew. He's in probably his young 20s. And he took us to the scene of the final resistance of the Warsaw Ghetto. And basically, there's nothing to see. There's a mat. You walk down the street. It looks like regular apartment buildings, and then there's a little hill of grass. And he takes you over there to the grass, and he reads you what the monument says. It says, "Here are the bunkers of the last pocket of resistance of the Warsaw Ghetto." And I think it was the Warsaw Ghetto. I think it was inside the ghetto. And this is the bunker. He says, right beneath our feet is the bunker where. I don't remember the name of the head of the resistance of the Warsaw Ghetto, where he basically, where they were killed or they committed suicide right beneath your feet. All of a sudden, my brother-in-law, my father-in-law realized they're Kohanim. Those Jewish bodies are right beneath our feet. They weren't buried. They were taken out by the nice Nazis and moved elsewhere to a Kibbutz Israel. They're all of a sudden, they run to the street. And they didn't realize where the tour guide was taking them. And the tour guide understood exactly what happened. I told you he was Jewish. And he got so angry at us. He said, "I don't understand. If you decided to come to Poland, you should realize," and he meant this literally and not figuratively, "you should realize that underneath the streets are paved with Jewish blood. If you're a Kohen, you shouldn't have come to Poland." Wow. What a frightening thing. He wouldn't say it figuratively. And we always heard the idea that, you know, the Jewish bodies are lined the streets. But he meant it literally, that if you're a Kohen and you care about not being above Jewish bodies, then why did you come to visit Warsaw? When does somebody fight when they know they're going to lose? When there's no choice anyway. If you know you're going to die, if Klal Yisrael realized after the Nes of Hanukkah that they were dead because they didn't have Torah and mitzvahs, they weren't dead because they could have lived very comfortable lives if they would have just Hellenized themselves. But they consider themselves dead if they don't keep Torah and mitzvos. And it was that perspective of seeing themselves as dead that pushed them to be able to enter a battle that they know they were going to lose. Enter a suicidal mission, enter a kamikaze mission against Rabim, against Rishayim, against Zaydim, against Tmeim, all those people and all those five characteristics that describe somebody, that the group of the Yavanim that were to be so much stronger to win the war. So what was it? So what was it that the Jews had? There's one midah that makes a person feel that if I don't have Torah and mitzvahs, I'm dead. It's the mitzvah of Ahavas Hashem. When I love Hashem, I love His Torah, and I love His mitzvahs, and I realize that without Torah and mitzvahs, I have nothing. I'm dead. I'm good as dead. That's what prompted Kazi battle and fight against the Yavanim. That's the koach of Ahava that the Jews had, a two-step Ahava. Number one, to realize that without Torah, there's nothing. And once you have nothing, then you might as well give up your life because you have nothing anyway. Says the says Rav Teichtal, a beautiful idea. With this, you could also answer the question that the Achronim asked. The Achronim asked the question, how come we had to have the nes of... So let me back up a moment. So what we're saying is that the nes of Purim was precipitated and was motivated by Yira. The Yira that the Jews had to save their lives. Whereas, as opposed to that, the nes of Chanukah was because of the Jews, not Yira, but their Ahava towards Hashem. And therefore the dedication to be willing to fight was all based on Ahava. And with that distinction between Ahava of Chanukah as opposed to the Yira, that was what prompted the Jews in the nes of Purim, we can understand, says Rav Teichtal, an answer to the famous question that the Achronim ask about why do we need the Nes Shemen? Why do we need to have Tahar oil? After all, Tumah Hutsha B'Tzibur, Tumah Dechuya B'Tzibur, if the Rov of the Tzibur were Tmeim, then you don't have to have Nes, you don't have to have Shemen Tahar. You're allowed to use Shemen that's Tameh. So, suggests Rav Teichtal the following. He says there's a fascinating Rashi in Dvarim. Rashi in Dvarim says, Ha'osin me'ava, when you do mitzvahs me'ava, when you serve Hashem me'ava, you get twice as much schar as from Yira. That's what Rashi quotes Chazal in Dvarim says. When you do mitzvahs me'ava, you get double schar than from doing from Yira. Oh, says Rav Teichtal, that's why there needed to be that extra nes by Chanukah. Purim, we served Hashem, we were prompted to come back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu through Yira. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the Yeshua. But if Chanukah, we served Hashem with Ava, therefore we have to get a double Yeshua. It wasn't enough to have the Yeshua to defeat our enemies. There has to be another level, another dimension, another layer of Yeshua in order for the Ava to be double what we achieved through Yira. And therefore there had to be another miracle, a second miracle. There had to be the mace of Shemen. Because you had to have a nace of Shemen to be the double nace compared to the nace that we experienced by Purim, which was only Me'ava, by Chanukah, which is Purim, which was only Me'ira. Whereas by Chanukah, it's Me'ava, and therefore you have to have not only the nace of the defeating our enemies, but also the additional layer of nace of the nace of the Shemen. That's why you needed the second nace, the nace of the Shemen also. Okay, that was just an aside. But with this, we could come back to understand another question before we get to our final conclusion. We asked, how come Chanukah is celebrated differently than Purim? Purim, of course, we celebrate with partying. Chanukah, we celebrate through Hallel, through Hodah, in a very different way, in a less physical way. For this, Rav Teichtal draws our eyes to an incredible Rambam. The Rambam talks about Ahavas Hashem in Hilchas Tshuva, in the end of Hilchas Tshuva. The Rambam says the following. It's Yadu Ubarer, everybody knows. She'ein Ahavas HaKadosh Baruch Hu Niksheres B'libo Shel Adam. Ahavas Hashem is not tied to a person's heart Ad She'yishge Batamid. Until a person's Yishge Batamid. Yishge, what does the word Yishge mean? And continues the Rambam, V'yazav Kol Masha Ba'olam Chutz Mimen. You have to leave everything in the world except for that. You have to be focused just on Ahava and loving Hashem and not care about anything else in the world. All I want, all I care. I don't care about ice cream. I don't care about Ferraris and Lamborghinis, I don't care about. All I care about is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, my love for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What does that word Yishka mean? The Rambam said that a true love to Hashem can't be achieved unless a person is Yishka Tamid in Ahavas Hashem. What does the word Yishka mean? So if you open up the Ravid on that Rambam, the Ravid says there are two possible sources or roots of the word Yishka. It could mean like the word in Tehillim, Shigayon David. Shigayon is a shir. That Ahavas Hashem has to be like a song to us. Not sure what that means, but maybe we'll develop that in a moment. Alternatively, says the Ravid, maybe the word Yishke Batamid, that we have to be Yishke in Avas Hashem, is from a different Shoresh. Lashon of Shogeg. Yishke Tamid Shogeg, meaning everything, we should be oblivious to everything else. We should be like forgetting everything else in the world. We should be oblivious to all the pleasures of the world. All we focused on is HaKadosh Baruch Hu and our desire and our love for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what the end of the Rambam. The Rambam said at the end, right, that this fits very well with the end of the Rambam. The end of the Rambam said that true love to HaKadosh Baruch Hu cannot be achieved in the heart of a human, ad sheyishke batamid, whatever that word means, and a person should leave and become not interested in all the pleasures of the world except for the pleasure of Avas Hashem. So maybe the word yishke batamid also means that exact point. You should forget about it. You should be like a shogeg. You should forget about all the other things in the world, that the world has, all the pleasures of the world that it has to offer you, other than the exquisite pleasure of Avas Hashem. That's one pshat. But that first suggestion could also mean something very significant. That the Ravid said, maybe the word Yishkeba is the word Shigayon, like a sheer song. That my Avas Hashem has to be a song. What does it mean that Avas Hashem is a song? Well, says Rav Teichtal, when we express our love to somebody, when you express love to somebody, it's expressed through shir. It's expressed through hallel. It's expressed through singing. That's an expression of shir. And therefore, with this in mind, both of these pshatim are going to tell us something incredible about the contrast between Purim on one hand and Chanukah on the other hand. Purim was through because of Yira. The Chanukah came about because of our incredible Ahava. Ahava towards Hashem, Ahava towards our mitzvahs, and that's what prompted us to serve Hashem and to be willing to sacrifice our life, to beat out the Yavanim so we could do mitzvahs. Well, what do you do when you have Ahava? You do two things. Number one, you don't care about anything else. That's why we don't celebrate with food and drink. Number two, you celebrate with shir. The two things that the Rambam might mean, either song or not caring about anything else in the world, are the exact same points that differentiate Purim from Chanukah. We don't have the food like we have on Purim. Rather, we ignore all the food. We celebrate through Hallel and Hodah. That's the celebration of Chanukah, as opposed to Purim when we feast and we party. Rather, on Chanukah, it's Hallel, you may Hallel the Hodah. And that's exactly the difference between Purim, because on Chanukah, we celebrate through Ahava, and the Ahava has these two aspects, A, of shir, of singing song, of Hallel the Hodah, and B, of ignoring all the pleasures of the world because we're focused so much on Ahava. And with this, we could also understand the final question that we have about why Chanukah is not Nitan Likasev. And the answer is because something that is to be written is something that could be confined, something that could be captured. Purim, which was a yontif that was based on Yira, and what pushed us to do tshuva and what brought the Geula was our Yira. Yira is constraint, could be described, could be captured. That's the nature of Yira. Yira is the opposite of a hispashtus. Yira is a constriction. And therefore, Purim, which was all based on constriction, that kind of nes, that kind of Yeshua, that kind of response to a Kodesh Baruch, the precipitated the nes of Purim, is nitan likasev, could be captured. Masha ein kein, the nes of Chanukah, was Ahava. The nature of Ahava is something that is beyond, that can't be encapsulated, it can't be described, it can't be captured, it can't be put into, constrained. Because the Ahava is just an Ahava that sprouts all over, that shoots out all over and can't be contained. And therefore, when it says that, when the Gemara says that Chanukah lo nitan likasev, it doesn't mean you're not allowed to write down the nes of Chanukah in Tanakh. It's that the nature of the miracle of Chanukah, the nature of the Ahava of that brought about the miracle of Chanukah, was one of pure Ahava, one of unbridled Ahava, one of Ahava that was so vast that we were willing to, through our Ahava as Hashem, to give up our lives, which is the ultimate Ahava that anybody could ever have. And that was the Ahava that Klal Yisrael demonstrated in the time of the Cheshmonaim. And therefore, that Ahava is beyond capture. That Ahava is something that can't be constrained, that can't be captured, that can't be limited to words. Words are finite. And therefore, the miracle the celebration, the nitzachon of Chanukah is one that is infinite, one that cannot be captured in the finite words of Tanakh. And therefore, says Rav Teichtal, that's what it means, the Chanukah, the Nes of Chanukah is lo nitan likasev. So I think the perspective of what Chanukah offers us, Chanukah is a time not just of doing mitzvahs, not just of dedication to mitzvahs, but an incredible zeal and ava of realization that there's nothing else in the world that matters to me other than our connection to Hashem. That's the unique ava that Klal Yisrael had, and that's what prompted them to be able to fight a battle, a kamikaze battle. That's a lesson I think we could all learn for ourselves, to put everything else in perspective and realize what we really are aiming for, what we really desire for ourselves, for our family, for our future, for our Olam Haba, no less, is the opportunity to come close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu through His Torah, through His mitzvos, and through lighting the Torah, through lighting the menorah for the last 8 nights, hopefully that the aura of the Torah, the aura of the candles will hopefully have a hashpa and embed itself into our soul, into our psyche, so we could be imbued with this ahava. And as we say, Al Nisan, just two more times, the Shemona Esrei, unless you're going to wash for breakfast and have a bagel. Just two or three more times in Al Nisan, we're going to talk about the Rabban Biyad Ma'atim and realize that every bit of the fact that Klal Yisrael were willing to fight an impossible foe, the impossible foe, right? I dream the impossible dream, to fight the invincible foe. That which we were willing to fight the invincible foe is only because we cared more about Torah and mitzvos than we cared about our staying alive. And we were willing to sacrifice it all so that we could rededicate ourselves to Torah and mitzvos. And hopefully that should give us all the chizuk to rededicate ourselves to Torah, to mitzvos, each in our own way. And I thank you all for joining us tonight on this Zos Chanukah. We should be zocha to celebrate together with Torah, with mitzvos, with lots of unbridled ava for one another, unbridled ava for Torah, unbridled ava for mitzvos, unbridled ava for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Thanks all for joining. I see, Ellie, you wanted to ask a question. Please, just a thumbs up. Okay, thank you. It's nice to have you. Thank you, Mr. Kapel, and the Chazen, and Mr. Klinkowitz, and Ellie, and Yanki Melman, and Mr. Davies, and Dr. Pinter, and the Greengards, and the Lewittises, and Safrir, and Mike. I'm not sure who Michael and Mark are. Mark might be Gold, Mr. Gold, and Michael, I'm not sure who that is. But I want to wish you all a Freilich Chanukah. Thank you so much. A Lichtik and Chanukah, Freilich Chanukah. There's so much more that the Sfarim write that we could absorb on Vizos Chanukah, so we should be successful in absorbing all that Ava. And hopefully, after we absorb it all, just like the latkes absorb the oil, and then you try to get a little bit of that when you smush down the paper towel, we should hopefully have absorbed all the Ava, so that little by little, whenever we need to, we'll have a little bit of Ava to push out here and there in our Torah mitzvah.
You have been listening to a presentation of BensTorah.com.